staff may briefly respond to statements or questions posed by the public. Please fill out a speaker card and hand it to your city clerk when you come up to speak. You'll have 3 minutes. Those people wishing to speak on any item scheduled on tonight's agenda will be given the opportunity to speak when that item is being considered. Welcome.
Yes, good evening, city council members. Thank you. Every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon, from here until SNAP is fully funded, the Paso Robles Democratic Club will be collecting foods, cans, non-perishable, shelf-ready food, and monetary donations to give to the food bank. This is going to happen every Saturday at 12th and Spring Street by the park. There'll be a truck saying food donations, food drive. So please spread the word and let's gather up some food for the food bank.
And your name, ma'am?
Gloria Fema.
Very good.
Sorry.
Thank you.
The Democratic Club.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I tell you, I'm getting my exercise today. Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. First, I want to say I'm really excited about the 25 mile per hour flashy signs on by 101 and Spring Street. It has changed. That is probably becoming the most dangerous stretch there. I found a wish list I wrote in 2023, and I think one of my wish for our area was a flashy walk light across from JJ's Market. And I think we're getting close to that. I'm hoping there's a reason why we're monitoring that area. I have other things that I found in 2023 that I had wished from my neighborhood that you guys have finally caved in, I guess, but maybe not. One of the things I wanted to say about the bike lanes, they look great. I had a question for Didis, I'm not sure. Some of the people are actually complaining about the green and the way the markings are. Some people don't understand it, especially coming down Union Road. They feel like they lost a lane. I see them all over the East Bay. I tell you, they threw me off in Fremont. I made a right turn in Fremont right with the bike lane as opposed to going over the entire corner. The other thing that I had wished for was right there by PR Laundry, where everybody was popping tires. I'm so happy to see that fixed too. So the other thing was cockroaches. We found out that maybe my neighbor was the source of it for our block. That has been attended to. That brings me to you, Ms. Hall. The Attorney General sent information about a year or two ago about housing conditions, and that if there are cockroaches or any kind of vermin or pests that are found, that it is your responsibility to let the housing projects know that they need to eradicate that. The other thing that I wanted to ask about was the public safety survey results. Are those coming? What happened to the play structure at the skate park? Where is our homeless coordinator, director? I see she's going to be speaking at HBA, but I haven't seen her here in the last month and a half, and I'm getting more angry phone calls from Riverbed constituents alike. And you saw the last meeting, there was a whole room full of people that are really disappointed in the lack of services now. So I'm really excited. I hope someone can explain those green, especially on Union Road, that neighborhood of District 1 feels like they've lost a lane on that particular road driving down. But I'm very excited about some of the things that I had hoped for in 2023 that are coming true. Food truck row, all the things. And even though I am probably an annoying gadfly, I still want to thank everybody for working with me, because you don't have to.
Thank you. Yeah, Warren, question on that. I know that originally when we first started painting bike lanes, we went with red, and then shortly after that, I think the state code changed it to green, which is what we are doing now currently on our roads.
Yeah, the uniform standard is for green for bikeways, and the question about the bikeway changes on Union Road, there was originally two through lanes on basically southbound Union, South River Road. One of those lanes was dropped. It wasn't dropped to accommodate the bike lane. The bike lane was already there previously, what the purpose of that lane drop was to protect that free right turn onto the 13th Street Bridge. The majority of traffic coming down Union Road is making the right turn. When there was two lanes there, a queue of four cars in that lane would block the right turn lane and actually created more congestion. So it looks like we got rid of a lane for a bike lane, but that's not true. We got rid of a lane to protect the right turn move.
Thank you. Anyone else on public comment? Anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay. We'll move on then to item M, agendas to be deferred. Mr. Haught, do we have anything?
Mayor, no items for deferral this evening.
Great, thank you. Move on to N, and you have the overview of the items on consent. I think we have 1 through 9 tonight.
Yes, Mayor. So 9 items on the consent calendar this evening. The first is the approval of your minutes from the October 21st City Council meeting. Second item is the approval of the minutes from your October 22nd special City Council meeting. Item number 3 is the receipt of the advisory body minutes for the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee meeting on September 8th of this year. And then the second one is the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee meeting from the 8th of September as well. Item number 4 is the approval of the 2026 City Council meeting schedule. Just a quick note, there were, I think, fewer overall conflicts that we saw on the proposed calendar for next year. Again, most of your meetings are proposed to be on the first and third Tuesdays. I think the one exception, and Melissa will correct me if I'm wrong, is January, where we had some holidays that butted up against both agenda preparation deadlines as well as being, I think one was the day before a meeting, so I think we moved that to the second Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
14th.
The 14th, so we just combined the two January meetings into one. We did a similar thing this year, if you recall. The only other thing I would highlight is that we do have a proposed meeting date on the election, on Election Day, more or less a year from now in November. And we've traditionally held short meetings on election night. And so that is proposed again as it is constituted and what's recommended for you this evening. Item number 5 is the receipt of the warrant register. So since your last meeting, the city has made $2.1 million in various payments. Ones that exceed $100,000 or more include a payment to Newton Construction. This is for training tower equipment related to the fire training tower behind Station 3 in the amount of $149,549.33. Second item is Granite Construction Company. That was a payment for the construction contract associated with Creston Road Phase 1 in the amount of $728.73. Item number 3 is a pass-through payment to Visit SloCal for the August 2025 maintenance or tourism improvement district collections in the amount of $131,204.37. And then similarly, the last notable payment is a payment to Travel Paso. And again, this is a pass-through payment for the August 2025 tourism improvement district for them in the amount of $174,088.62. Moving on, item number 6 is the approval of a contract to Prime Technologies for City Council Chamber improvements associated with the enhanced video broadcast project. We've talked about, I think, this project 2 or 3 times. This is going to install video cameras and production equipment in the council chambers to broadcast video from our meetings out to the public, as well as make some other aesthetic and functional upgrades to the council chamber. Item number 7 is the approval of a resolution to purchase a potable water arsenic removal treatment media. Item number 8 is the approval of final map, track number 3154, phase 2 for recordation. This is in the Olson South Chandler planning area number 19. And then the last item this evening on your consent calendar is the approval of a subdivision improvement agreement, again, for the Olson South Chandler specific plan. This is for phase 2 of certain backbone infrastructure improvements. Happy to answer any questions if there are.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. Items on consent calendar are considered routine and do not normally require separate discussion. However, if any member of the council or the public has specific questions of clarification on the item, we will address them now before the vote is taken. If a full discussion is desired by a member of the council or the public, the item will be removed from the council consent calendar and moved then to the discussion items agenda. I will ask now the council if they have any questions on any items, and then I'll move on to the public. Start off on my right. Fred Strong?
Yes. My question is of the city manager. When you were talking about item number four, did you say that meeting has been moved, so it's not going to be on election night now?
I'm sorry, Councilmember Strong. No, what I was saying is that as proposed, there is a scheduled regular city council meeting on election night next year, November 3rd. And so we've typically held the last few years, I know we on election night we've had meetings, so staff carried that forward here. I just wanted to highlight it for the council and for the public that that is proposed.
In that case, I'd like to pull the item.
Okay. We'll pull that. That was item six, I think, wasn't it? Or
item number four.
Four, okay. Any other questions on the right? Anything on the left? Anyone from the public have any questions? Yes, ma'am. Linda?
Oh, you want me to ask now?
Yes, yes, if you have a question.
The question and comment that I have about number six in the video, you guys heard some of it today. One of the reasons why I'm advocating for Zoom participation, because it also allows your out-of-town guest speakers, you can do presentations and things like that throughout the state. I'm a big believer of doing it right the first time. If we can find the funds, that's my go-to. It is how I actually participated and worked for Ken Houston. I watched the city council meetings from my home and was able to text him and do all that stuff and give him the information he needed. I will always say this, we're the second largest city in the county. We got to show up, show off. These are the types of things that I think are awesome to compete and to have the best of. I like the sure, I sing, so all the equipment is top of the line. I think it's worth it. So if we can do it all at once, I'm all for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Anyone online? Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll bring it back to council for discussion and or action. Items 1 through 9.
Mayor Hammond, I'd like to make a motion.
Councilman Gregory?
We approve items 1 through 3 and 5 through 9.
So we have a motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion. I'll call for the question then, please.
Councilmember Gregory?
Yes.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
So we will move item 4 to the discussion items agenda. Moving on to public hearings, we'll open public hearings, and we have item 1, second reading by title only, public hearing and adoption of ordinance number 1164, adopting 2025 California Building Code standards and local amendments. Charlie, do you have that for us?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. We're here for the 2025 Building and Fire Code Update, second reading.
Okay.
So, as stated before, there's a three-year cycle of codes in the state, and it goes through this process, as you see on the screen, where it goes through committees and goes to the public, and they're allowed to comment and through these periods, and then there's a final effective draft, and that will go into effect January 1st, 2026 at the state level. Significant changes for the 2025 code from the 2022 codes are the organization of the codes. So the wildland urban interface is was taken out of the building code and given its own chapter. In energy compliance, QII insulation is a requirement now in the energy code, so you have to get third-party verification of your insulation.
Charlie, can you throttle up on your voice a little bit?
I can.
We're having a hard time.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We have some background noise.
Also in the energy code, being battery ready is a requirement for battery storage systems. You don't have to have the battery in place, but you have to have the infrastructure for it.
Okay.
Gas water heaters and space heaters, you can still install them, but there's quite a penalty in the energy code for doing so. You'd have to make up in various other aspects, like higher insulation values or more solar to offset that.
Are they asking more for on-demand, like Rinnai type units instead of gas water heaters now?
The focus is towards electrification of everything.
Okay.
At the state level, yeah.
Got it.
So you can still pursue gas water heaters, space heating, just the penalties for it by increasing other areas of energy efficiency are much higher.
I see.
Than they have been. And then finally, in our area, the structural portion of the code for seismic activity, there'll be a 20% increase in structural factors for seismic design.
Okay.
And then on the fire code and EV chargers, by local amendment, we'd like them not allowed in underground parking garages, sub-level garages, or multi-story parking garages. And then, Paul, can you speak to the connections?
Fire Marshal Paul Petty.
Hello. So for the fire department connections, what we're looking at now is we already have fire department connections in place. What we're looking for is a more streamlined process for the testing and the operation of those. Every 5 years, we have to have, for Title 19 requirements, the buildings, the commercial buildings, tested for their sprinkler systems. And with this is threaded connections that we're finding that over time degrade, and it's causing issues with water leakage and additional costs for the contractor, for the ultimately the owners of the buildings. So what we're looking for is a rigid type of connection that is held on with a clamp style, so that if we have a small water leak and it starts to rust that connection, that all that will break are the bolts when they're disconnecting it, and then they can replace it. So we're just being proactive with this. There isn't an additional cost for this. It's just putting that in our ordinance so that we can let the contractors know when they're developing projects that this is the way that we want to go.
Got it. Thank you. So is that the item, the two items, fire and building?
Right.
Yeah, so looks like we have an option here to discuss.
So the options are to approve the second reading by title only and adopt the ordinance, or refer back to staff with direction for further analysis.
Okay.
So at this point, Mr. Mayor, we would need you to open the public hearing, take any comment, close the public hearing, and then
vote.
The second reading, take the vote on the second reading. The building code or the code updates are done a little bit differently than most ordinances. It requires two public hearings.
I see. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and open up then to public. Well, let's go to council first. Okay. Mr. Greger.
Thank you. So, Charlie, just to clarify, the Wildland Urban Interface, that's in existence for a code, but it doesn't apply to any homes in Paso Robles?
Currently, no.
Okay.
Currently, it does not.
Unless that map changes. Unless the map changes, correct?
Or state law.
Okay. And then, did I hear you right, saying on-demand water heaters are treated just like regular water heaters for the energy code?
Yeah.
As far as forcing people to get rid of their gas utility?
That is the direction of the energy code, yes.
Okay.
The future is pointing in that direction.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Bausch.
Charlie, thanks for coming back. The first reading, we discussed a little bit about the mandate for electricity over gas. Since then, done a little bit of research on that. That is a state requirement. That's not a local requirement.
That's correct. That's a state.
So nobody from locally here said that's a really good idea. We ought to incorporate that. That was not foisted upon us at a state level.
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Greg, do you have anything? Okay. And we're good on this side. So I'll go ahead and then open up the public. Dale?
Dale Gustin, when this came up for first reading, I had the similar content concerns that Councilman Bausch had. We're really in an energy crisis, whether the government wants to admit it or not. And they think that by forcing us into all electric, they're going to solve this crisis. It's making it worse. We have an abundance of natural gas, an abundance. And we're even shipping natural gas to other countries. And you people want to just say, no, no more natural gas. I disagree.
Dale, quick question. Did you get my email this afternoon?
What?
Get my email to you on another subject?
My computer's down. I didn't get any emails.
Okay, come here for a second.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You can text me. I have my cell phone.
I didn't have your phone number. That was the reason. So just
it's 239 Dale.
Yep. Talk to me afterwards then, please. Okay. Anyone else from the public? Anyone online? Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll go ahead and bring it back, close the public hearing, and we will then read the item.
Mayor Hammond.
Councilman Gregory.
I move we approve the second reading by title only and adopt Ordinance 1164, an ordinance of the City of Paso Robles, California, amending Title 17 of the El Paso de Robles Municipal Code to adopt the reference of 2025 edition of... Where'd it go? It's hiding on me.
Right here.
I'm not reading all that.
I know. Just
all the building codes.
as prepared. Yeah, as prepared in our agenda.
Yep.
Okay, so we have a motion by Gregory. We have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Discussion? Okay, we'll call for the question.
No, discussion, John.
Yes, I didn't see. I'm sorry.
I think the upgrade, the code upgrade, is great to a point. I have a real problem with the mandate of electricity over what I think should be a consumer choice of gas or electric. I'm not really a proponent of either. I don't have anything against gas or electricity, but I don't think we're in a position yet to mandate that. So with all due respect, I hope you understand.
Yeah, I'll kind of echo Chris's sentiment too. We live in California, and that's the problem. Direction of California government in Sacramento wants this to happen, and there's not a whole lot local cities can do about it. But there are options, and that's good still. So, our builders do have some things to be able to choose. Okay, well, we're done on this point. We'll go ahead and call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory? Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
No.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. We'll go ahead and open then discussion items. The first one up is the reservation of the general plan surplus density units for Ardmore townhouses, a proposed mixed-use commercial overlay, and for a residential development at 2930 Union Road. Delcy, Darcy, you have that item for us?
Yeah, this will be a joint presentation by myself and Darcy Delgado, our city planner. So this is what we call a reservation of general plan surplus density units. This is for a proposed townhouse project on Ardmore Road. Tonight is not an approval of the project. We're not really discussing the pros or cons of the project. We have an application for this project, and it does require some units out of the general plan surplus density pool. So tonight, we just are looking for concurrence from the council that we can reserve those units and then allow the applicant to move forward, knowing that when they come back to the council in the future, those units that they would need from the general plan have been set aside for that project. So that's really the decision tonight. We'll talk about the project a little bit, but that's not the decision. It's really just, are we going to earmark these units so this project application can move through the entitlement process? And it will go to Planning Commission, public hearing, and then ultimately City Council for a public hearing. So with that said, a little bit of background on what are surplus density units, because this is kind of a unique thing to Paso Robles. So this comes from the city's general plan that was adopted in 2003. That was a fairly ambitious general plan at the time. It basically proposed to double the size of the city. A lot of the growth that we're seeing right now with these big specific plans go back to that decision in 2003. So at that point, the council decided that they would adopt the general plan that would allow up to 44,000 people in Paso Robles. It was somewhat of a controversial decision at the time. And because of that, there was a lot of direction from the council and city manager at the time that we needed to be very vigilant about making sure we never exceeded the 44,000 population. So there was a number of processes that were put in place starting in 2003 to track the development and make sure we didn't exceed that. Now, when the general plan was approved, we rezoned a lot of land, including Chandler Ranch, Olson Ranch, and Beechwood, to accommodate a lot of this growth. So a lot of this density that was approved in the general plan was then allocated to those properties. But that what that really created was a situation that if you wanted to rezone something somewhere else in town, there wasn't really a way to do it without going over the 44,000 population cap. So that became a problem for the city. So the solution that the council and staff came up with in 2013 was basically to go back and look at the general plan and see if there was actually some additional density that was available that wasn't actually allocated to any properties in town. And what they discovered is because the population per housing unit had dropped since 2003, we could build more houses and still stay under the 44,000 population. So that's what you see in 2013, Council Resolution 1357 basically identified that there was an additional 594 surplus density units within the general plan that had never been allocated to any projects that could, through rezonings and general plans, be allocated to projects. And that's what happened over the next couple of years, is that was allocated to a number of projects, including like the Beechwood specific plan, the Olson Ranch project, some additional affordable projects in town. So the reason this is happening is because, as I said, our population per unit is dropping, and it's dropped yet again. Back in 2003, the average persons per household was about 2.7. And you'll recall this town used to have lots of families and lots of kids and whatnot. But as demographics have changed, we're seeing fewer families and kids in town, so that population per unit is dropping, and it's dropping fairly significantly. So this is our current population, 2025. You'll see we're at about 31,000. So in the last year, we grew by less than 100 people, yet we built over 300 houses. So we're building houses at, you know, record clips, but our population's almost flat. And that's just because even though we're building houses, the people in the existing houses, there's fewer and fewer of them. So what that means is there is a lot more capacity under that 44,000 unit or person threshold than there was in the past. So in 2020, when we did the housing element update. The council adopted a new resolution because population per unit dropped again. We identified another 345 surplus density units. So 99 of those you've allocated. The Riverwalk Terrace project was one of those that you allocated units to. We still have 246 remaining units, and that's really what we're here tonight to talk about, is a request for allocating 154 of those surplus units to a future project. As I mentioned, this isn't a project approval. Really, we're just earmarking those for a future council decision. And with that, I'll turn it over to Darcy.
All right, thank you. Okay, so as Warren mentioned, the project applicant is requesting 154 units for a proposed project at 2930 Union Road. This is a 12.98-acre site. And currently, the zoning is commercial light industrial. So there is no by right residential, and that's why we're here tonight. They are proposing, as part of their development plan, to incorporate a mixed use overlay, which would allow up to 30 units per acre. So that is the residential component. So if they obtain the mixed use overlay as part of the request, then they will have the right to develop the residential. So here's the development plan that they're proposing. These are semi-attached townhouses. It is a for sale project. The applicant is here, and they'll probably dive a little bit more into the scope of it, keeping it high level. Again, this is going to come back again through the public hearing process, but just wanted to give you a sense of what it is that they're proposing. All right, so here's the tracking table that we're using with this current cycle two surplus density unit. So as Warren mentioned, with this last housing element, we had 345 total units. 99 have since been allocated with the Highland Center site and then the Woodland Plaza, which is the Riverwalk Terrace. So this project, we're calling it the Oak at Ardmore, they're requesting the 154 units that are still, there's 246 currently. If the council earmarks these for this project, then there will be still 92 surplus units remaining. So if another applicant comes forward, you know, in the next year, there are still units available that could then be allocated at your discretion. All right, so reserving the units, as I said, will allow the project applicant to move forward. It gives them a level of certainty and assurance as they're preparing their materials and studies for planning staff review. The reservation of the units at this stage will not constitute a project approval. And then ultimately, if the units are not incorporated into the project, they would remain unallocated and available for other development projects. So we're still going to work out the details of that with the application of, you know, what's the timeline. If these get allocated, then is, you know, do they have to proceed in a certain amount of time before they essentially go away. That would all get worked out. But again, tonight we're talking about earmarking these so that they have some level of assurance. As part of the entitlement project, staff and the applicants are also coordinating on an affordable housing component. I know the applicant's going to probably talk a little bit more about this, but just at a high level, they're proposing to model their affordable housing component after the County of San Luis Obispo's Regional Housing Incentive Program. They're using a point-based system, and it's designed to simplify access to development incentives similar to the State Affordable Housing Density Bonus Program. So the applicant has proposed to contribute an in-lieu fee equivalent to 2 points in the county system, payable to the city for use in a future tax credit affordable housing project. So their sense is that this would be a good alternative, a way to kind of give back as part of the request for allocating units for this project site. They'll dive into it, I'm sure, a little bit more to explain it, but there is some affordability component that we're trying to work out. Again, this would be as part of the development plan, the rezone for mixed use overlay, and the allocation of units, which would go through that public hearing process. All right, the council's options tonight, of course, you could take no action. Option two, approve the draft resolution, which would reserve 154 surplus density units for this project site. You could also provide alternative direction to staff. Staff is recommending that the council approve the resolution to reserve the units from the cycle two surplus density units for the project site. Ultimately, the the project design, it meets the broader intent of the general plan, the housing element, and the economic strategy. We're seeing this as more housing for the city, for people who could use it, and this would be a great location in the city, good opportunity overall. So with that, that's all I have for my staff report. I know that the applicant would like to speak on about this a little bit more.
Okay, why don't we do this? Let's questions of staff first, and then we'll get the applicant up. So start off with Chris Bausch.
Thank you. Did we see this project not too long ago, or is this a neighboring property that I'm recollecting?
So you haven't seen this project, but this site had a different project entitlement a couple years ago.
Okay.
And so now they're moving forward with a different proposal.
So the office industrial, that's gone?
My understanding, I don't know where it's at with the expiration date, but this would replace it. It would supersede.
Thank you.
Okay. Pro Tem Gregory?
No.
Good. Fred Strong?
I've got
Chris Beal.
I think this is a really interesting concept. I like the idea of townhomes. It certainly goes a long way in terms of diversifying our housing production and kind of our housing inventory, which I think is important. I'm curious, can we go back to the slide with the credits, housing surplus credits, is that right?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Right, so like we have 246, this is proposing 154, which leaves us 92. I mean, it's sort of a big hunk of that 246 number. Are there risks with that? Is that something we should be thinking about or talking about, or?
There's not a serious risk. Once we exhaust this, there's other options that we know of that we can bring back to the council to identify additional units. This is what was easily identifiable, but the city council will have the discretion to allocate future units using some different, you know, metrics.
And can you tell me, when was the last time sort of townhome type projects have come around?
There was a couple that were approved kind of during the recession back in, you know, 2008, 2010. Those were built about 2014. So there's one over on Experimental Station, River Oaks, that was built. And then there's one right above the Highlands Church. That was the other one. So those both are kind of similar for ownership, kind of small lot townhouse kind of product. So that would be the last time we had it. It was almost 10 years ago those were available for sale.
Can we go back to the population slide, please? Okay, so where does like the population data come from?
Comes from the Department of Finance. So it's a state agency. They track all the populations. These are the official populations that are used for all the, you know, tax allocations. So it's a very reliable number.
And I just want to double check, like, in terms of ground truthing what this is trying to tell us. So is there a lag between the houses that we have been building and people moving in? Like, it was sort of implied that our population isn't growing. So that would suggest that people are maybe upgrading their houses, moving from within the community, staying within the community. But I'm not sure if that's true. So just talk through some of this.
Well, so the Department of Finance, they're charged with keeping these numbers because, like I said, they're for tax allocation. So they're as accurate as they can be. They survey us every year on number of units, and then they obviously are doing a lot of other things to make these determinations. I think what's happening is obviously people are moving into these new units that are being built, but across the town, we're just having fewer people in houses. So kids are moving out at a rate that is basically just keeping pace with these new folks moving in. And that's why, because you can go back at these numbers for the last 5 years or so, and they've basically been flat, regardless of how many units we build. And you look at our neighboring cities, they're building houses as well. Almost all of them have lost population at the same time. So the county's been building a lot of houses, and the population, you can see at the bottom for the county, the balance of the county lost population. So it's a bigger demographic shift that's going on rather than just kind of a housing construction issue.
Okay, thank you.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Warren, just to talk about the same subject on the surplus density. So we've come up with over 900 surplus units over the last few years because of the declining per head count per house being built, correct?
That's correct.
So as that moves forward, it looks like we're going to have other opportunities to even add more surplus.
I believe so. Yeah. I think that's something like the Housing Constraints Committee probably will start to look at next year.
So there's some comfort there. So, okay, thank you.
Councilmember Bausch.
Thank you. I thought of two follow-up questions. The first is probably wouldn't amount to a rounding error, but Councilmember Beal's point, we have some data that would lead us to believe that multiple families are moving into some of the newer apartments, for example, doubling, tripling, and I don't have any hard fact data, but would that be caught, reported during the survey? And if so, it probably isn't going to amount to a whole heck of a lot. But it's something to think about for the future as we move into capturing the accurate numbers.
Yeah, I do think with all population estimates, you do have issues of people kind of being in non-traditional housing locations and right. Whether they're getting counted in these official government numbers. I'm not exactly sure how Department of Finance, you know, accounts for that. It's something we could do a little bit more research on.
Thank you. And then back to my original question on the site at Ardmore. Was there an oak tree removal request? And if so, was that oak tree removed? Was it left in place? Where do we stand with that?
If I remember correctly, there were oak tree removals involved with the previous project. I don't know that they've been removed, but Warren's saying no, that is a component of this other project that I think there's one tree that the project is designed.
That's not being considered tonight.
No, that will be part of the development plan, the rezone, and the official allocation if the council gives that direction tonight to reserve. That would come forward again, so the oak trees would be discussed at a later date.
Thank you.
So my question is, Warren, I think I'd start with you. You know, our 44,000 is a planning threshold, right? It's not a top shelf limit. It's just a planning threshold for our services, sewer, water, those kind of things. And the delta I see between, you know, our current population and that is about 13,000. If you pull this down to two, a little more than two people per dwelling unit, that means somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,500 units we could technically build. My question, though, is how does the ADUs figure into this, or do they figure in at all?
So they don't figure into the general plan because they were created by the state, and they were when the state created these preemptions for ADUs, they specifically excluded them from any general plan or zoning regulation restriction. So where we had, you know, historically single family zones that were basically one household per property or lot, the state came in and overnight and said, no, you can build three. And obviously every city in the state didn't have, you know, hadn't planned for three per lot, where the rule had always been one. And the state said, it doesn't matter, you have to permit it no matter what. So those are kind of, we know they're out there, we know they're an issue, they definitely are an impact for, you know, services like water, sewer, as well as traffic, but under current state law, we can't consider them as part of the general plan, so they would not be counted under this population threshold. They do show up, though, in the Department of Finance surveys, so we are counting them there either way.
Interesting. Okay, that's what I was wondering, how it impacted this, you know, units that we have available. I think we probably have more surplus units, really, you know, that we can probably pull. I think you alluded to that we can calculate differently if we wanted to, but currently that's our policy. So, okay, that's all I had. If we can bring up the applicant and have them come forward. Welcome.
There's the clicker right there, Damien.
Hello, my name is Damien Mavis. I'm a principal
Can we speak up? This room's really weird.
Right. My name is Damian Mavis. I'm a principal at Covelop. I'm here with our development partner, Michael Stolte, as well as Jamie Jones. I think between all of us, we can probably answer all of your questions if they come up. So I'd like to thank staff for the complete staff report. Anyways, I think it helps to... to kind of look at the history of this property, and like Councilman Bosch alluded to, yes, there was a previous commercial industrial entitlement on it. But we've been working on this entitlement with a couple of false starts for nearly 4 years, from the original commercial development to a senior housing concept that we had to the current townhome project that was or that is in front of you. Originally, in late 2021, we started kind of envisioning this commercial flex industrial project that you see there, reaching final approvals in early 2024 after a threatened CEQA challenge. Unfortunately, during this time, interest rates really skyrocketed. And in reality, kind of as we were getting this approved, financially the project sort of died. And then we were expecting interest rates to drop, and so we spent the next 2 years trying to get tenants for the project, trying to build it, build the suit or sell to an end user, and we literally got zero traction because of the high interest rates and low demand. In the middle of 2024, Cal Poly City and Regional Planning Department, as kind of a student project, came up with an idea to kind of reimagine North Chandler Ranch as this like mixed use node. And then as well as the residential multifamily opportunity map was advanced or assembled by the city. And this kind of started the wheels turning. And so in talking to staff, we pivoted to housing. We didn't want to make the same mistake twice and entitle a project that didn't have a demand, so we went out and found a home builder. We went into escrow with that homeowner who wanted to do this age-restricted project that you see in front of us. And so we put that together. And I think, unfortunately, we sort of missed the mark with the age restriction. And the city, and talking to city staff, they guided us to an attached townhome project that would function more as attainable housing for the workforce. Unfortunately, our buyer walked, but that led us to this site plan that you see in front of you. The 154 townhomes, each on their own small lot, a mix of unit sizes and types of units, 3 to 4 bedrooms, typically 1,400 to 1,700 square feet, really geared towards family. The location is a good proximity to goods and services. So we're less than a mile from the Barney Schwartz Park, less than a mile from Golden Hill Union Road roundabout, which has some commercial obviously around it, less than a mile from the sports club. Most importantly, in the summer, less than a mile from the Ravine Water Park. We're less than 2 miles from Golden Hill Plaza, obviously a large shopping center, the Cuesta North Campus, all of the Wisteria Job Center, and even less than 2 miles from the future Majestic project. We kind of touched on this, but these were kind of the ideas that pointed us towards this residential project. On the top was this Cal Poly project, envisioning this mixed-use node at the Union and 46 intersection, sort of transitioning into more residential at North Chandler Ranch. So we might be the first housing project in this area, but we're certainly not going to be the last. And I think as those the Chandler Ranch develops and these other projects happen around us, it really will become this kind of eastern gateway to the city with recreational opportunities around the area, housing opportunities, et cetera. The the map on the bottom of the page here is the city's residential multifamily opportunity sites, and this constraints map. The city looked for areas that were ripe to apply the mixed-use housing overlay, sites that could easily be developed into higher density housing with the help of this overlay. So one of the sites is ours at site 26, and we agree we can provide this kind of attainable housing on this site. So that brings us to affordable housing, and I could talk for a long time about affordable housing. Kind of my day job is entitling housing, and my off hours I think about it all the time. But really it's a multifaceted problem, and no one project can solve kind of all of it. So at most we can address a few of the facets in each project. So with this project we focused on affordable by design. So all the homes are attached, they're on small lots, modest private yards, and shared recreational facilities all kind of provide a natural affordability, if that exists anymore. So we're targeting first-time home buyers as well as move-down empty nesters, and so that's really kind of both ends of the workforce. City staff asked us to kind of dig a little bit deeper in terms of affordability and come up with ideas. City threw out some ideas as well, and I think we had a kind of a constructive back and forth, and we landed on emulating the San Luis Obispo County incentive program that was recently adopted. So what I think was kind of important about this is during that process with the county, there was a really large outreach process and a research process to come up with the best program to produce affordable housing. So the best builders of deed-restricted affordable housing are the nonprofits, and what do they need? They need money to do their work. And the best builders of market-rate housing are the for-profit developers. And what do we need? We need streamlined, reliable processing for our projects, as well as flexibility. But we can pay for that as well. So kind of combining the two, you know, it's kind of an overused term, win-win, but it really kind of the marriage of the two turned out to be something that I think the county is really going to reap the benefits of. So the city's mixed-use overlay gives us that flexibility that we're talking about building housing in a commercial zone. And so if you look in the red box on the screen, if we wanted that same flexibility in the county, we would have to buy two incentive points, which is basically $60,000. So then that $60,000 goes to the county. In this case, it would go to the city. And then from there, it would go on to a nonprofit builder. So what's interesting is they can leverage that $60,000 kind of like at this 9-to-1 ratio and end up with $500,000 to go build affordable housing, which is what they do best, through their various tax credits and government programs. And the local donation also makes them more competitive in obtaining various state and national funding sources. So if you look at it holistically, the program incentivizes more market rate housing while facilitating more below market rate housing as well. Interestingly enough, there's about 750 entitled but unbuilt below market rate housing units in the county, and they're waiting on typically, you know, different funding sources to close that critical funding gap. So this program can help, and I think kind of emulating that on this project as a project feature, you know, we can do the same thing between us, the city, and the Paso Housing Authority. I think, you know, we can have sort of a small version of that. So we've been at this a long time, and we think that we have a project in front of the city that hopefully can gain support and we can deliver, and of course, importantly, that the market will accept. So, you know, it hits a lot of the housing objectives, the city's five-year economic development strategic plan. It was identified, as we said, as one of the key